Welcome to Stepping Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon.
Hi, everybody. My name's Sue Supriano, and my guest today is David Cobb. David Cobb is an attorney. He lives in Houston, Texas. He is the general counsel for the Green Party of the United States and also an associate on the program on corporations, law, and democracy. And he has a big job for all of us, really, challenging corporate personhood. And we're going to find out what that is. We are well acquainted with the huge amount of power that corporations have in the United States, in the world, in our lives. So I really welcome to hear about a plan to change this around, because it's a very important task. So David Cobb, just let's dive in and you explain what it's all about.
Sure, Sue. Thank you so much for this opportunity. The fact is that we're in the early stages of beginning to expose the social, legal, historical context for how it came to be that corporations wield so much wealth and power under law. Because it's not just a problem of what corporations are doing bad. It's not just the environmental degradation that they're associated with. It's not just the oppression of workers that they're doing. But it is the fact that we have legal doctrines that actually support and protect those egregious conducts and behavior. So our challenge is at the Program on Corporations, Law, and Democracy, as well as the Green Party and many other groups who are working to confront this, is how do we design democratic conversations and actions that directly challenge the illegitimate nature of corporations to govern? The fact is we've got a situation where corporations now are defining and dictating all of our institutions, right? I mean, the fact of the matter is, from our transportation policy, our energy policy, the very food we eat is dictated by corporations, and we're left with choosing between paper and plastic at the grocery store. That's not democracy. And what we're about, we have undertaken the task, the slow task, of rediscovering the histories of prior movement struggles that actually defined their culture, that actually defined or framed the question not just about changing one law or two, but how do you change legal doctrines? Mm-hmm. I like to point out, Sue, that the abolitionists, the early abolitionists, were not trying to create a slavery protection act to cause slave owners to be less harmful and less brutal to individual slaves. They set about actually ending slavery as an institution. And so we believe that if we go about ending corporate personhood as a legal institution, that'll give us a different framework.
Yeah, really. And corporate personhood means that a corporation has all the rights of an individual person, right? Am I correct?
Sue, that's exactly correct. And how ludicrous is that, just to say it out loud, that a corporation has rights inherent in the Constitution the same way a living, breathing human being does? It's an absurdity. And in fact, it's an absurdity that actually makes democracy itself impossible. Consider this. We, the people, are supposed to be sovereign. And by that, that means that we're in charge. Corporations, properly understood, are created by our state legislatures. And ideally, they should be entities that are created in order to serve a public interest. They are public and private institutions at the same time. In other words, they may be private, but they are created by our state government, and they are created, or they should be created, in order to serve a public need or fulfill a public purpose.
I just have to ask what you mean by they're created publicly. I'm not sure I understand that.
I thank you for stopping me, and let's actually be very clear about this. Every corporation, in order to get those legal protections and rights under law, have to be chartered by a particular state legislature. In other words, they don't exist until articles of incorporations are actually filed and accepted by the state legislature. Now, which is to say, individual people can engage in business, and private people can come together in business partnerships and engage. But if you want to get the special protection and dispensation under law of limited liability and get all these other incredible privileges, only the state government can actually give you that right. And it's not just the articles of incorporation, but every state gives certificates of authority to do business. Like, for example, Clear Channel, chartered in Texas, actually has a certificate of authority to do business in California. State legislatures create corporations and could, if there was sufficient public will, control what they do. The fact is, though, these corporate charters, although we've created them through our state legislatures, they've become some sort of Frankenstein monster that we're not controlling anymore. And we at the Program on Corporations, Law, and Democracy are challenging activists and citizens to rethink what their relationship is with corporations and rethink what their strategies as activists are, rather than challenge corporations one at a time, one bad act at a time. Let's go about the process of designing and strategizing campaigns that directly confront the corporate state.
Well, that sounds, as I thought, incredibly important, because people are feeling so powerless so often and saying, what can we do, what can we do? So listen up, folks. There's something that you can do. And certainly corporations are at the – and they're having these rights without responsibilities. And then as you're saying it, I mean, I'm just thinking, of course, you know, if the legislators were more accountable, there would be at least a little bit of accountability, but that doesn't seem to be how it is.
Well, it's not how it is now, because actually, just like corporations are controlling our transportation choices, our media institutions, just as they basically hijacked all the rest of the aspects of our society and culture, so too have they hijacked our own government. I mean, really and truly, with their ability to finance elections, they have basically been able to frame the acceptability of debate. Now, what if, by the way, we went about controlling our own government? All the rest of it would follow, Sue. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to say elections that are for sale are not free and fair. So everything I submit that if we scratch virtually any activist issue, underneath it you'll find the issue of corporate personhood, because it is that veil that corporations and the predatory class that owns corporations use in order to prevent us from actually democratizing our society and culture. Now, there are a couple of things that we can do and should be doing right away. The first is to educate ourselves on past movement struggles, whether it's the abolition of slavery, women getting the right to vote, the creation of the Social Security Administration, pure food and drug laws, ending child labor, the creation of unemployment insurance or workers' compensation laws. Every single one of those progressive moves forwards in American history follow the same basic trajectory. The first thing that happens is people begin to educate, agitate, and organize around a perceived harm. And the then existing power structure always fights it, Sue, every single time.
I've noticed.
How about that? But our forebears did not just say, well, the people in charge said we can't have it. You know, they continue to educate, agitate, and organize around these ideas. And ultimately, they have to politicize. That is to say, they have to get into electoral politics. And the existing dominant parties of the day fought abolition of slavery. They fought women getting the right to vote. They fought the Social Security Administration. It is only when an independent political party sprang up, independent of the dominant mainstream, that we were able to actually move beyond agitation and have good policies actually become good law. And what I'm suggesting is that when we reach a critical mass of people talking about issues of not just corporate harms, but corporate rule. The fact that corporations are ruling us in an unelected, unaccountable way, when you get enough people talking about that, the number of different strategies and techniques and tactics that good groups can begin to both craft and execute, I mean, you and I could spend the rest of the program just talking about what a different society we could have once that process begins. But we're in the process of getting that critical mass of people talking to each other, using the medium like this radio program to be able to have a democratic conversation about the corporate control of our lives. Once we begin that process, then it opens up a whole vista of what's possible.
So I hear you say that you're kicking off the ball here, and don't give up too fast. And of course, part of our culture now is that people want real quick results, and this thing that I mentioned earlier about feeling powerless. So when you're talking about the past, I don't know if people were more patient or what, but I hear you saying don't expect it to happen in a minute. Be ready for the long haul and don't give up.
That's exactly right, Sue. And like you, I'm not sure if the citizen activists of another era were more patient than we were. I think it may well be that they actually had an ability to actually imagine a different world in a way that we can't. The fact is that corporate media have basically been able to hijack the story we tell about ourselves, and they have actually framed the entire discussion about what's possible. I mean, the populist uprising was a mass democracy movement that had everything on the table. They were talking about, and they really believed that they were living in the midst of a moment to redefine American society. They were going to democratize the banking institutions. Can you imagine for a moment, Sue, activists today saying, you know what, we need to completely eliminate the Federal Reserve and actually make banks and the financial question democratically accountable to their local communities? I mean, that's the level at which the populist uprising was framing the debate. And I'm challenging all of the listeners of your program to begin to imagine another world as possible and to say, let's democratize our financial institutions, let's democratize our media institutions, let's democratize our food supply, let's democratize our politics. If we begin to go through that process, a whole nother world becomes possible. And the good news is we do have these roadmaps of these other groups, these other movement struggles, whether they're African-American struggle, whether they're Asian struggles, whether they're women's struggles, Native people struggles, all of these struggles ultimately had to confront the dominant cultural paradigm, the predatory class who owned everything, including the law and the police, and that's the same sort of fix that we're in. And if we're patient, but also not just patient, but also smart about connecting movement struggles broadly around not just stopping one corporate harm at a time, but actually demanding that we're going to create our own society and our own culture, that's when we can really win the big prize.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to remind people that my guest is David Cobb, who is General Counsel for the Green Party of the United States and also an associate with the Program on Corporations, Law, and Democracy. And as usual, we'll be giving a contact number later in the show. Well, I'll tell you right now, I think the website for the Program on Corporations, Law, and Democracy is the usual www.pocclad.org. And we'll repeat that again later. So this is a really crucial thing to do, and I'm glad you brought up the media because, of course, people are so brainwashed, and that's part of the plan. And so let's get into what exactly to do. And also, if you have any, I'm curious about if anything is going on internationally.
Well, yes, as a matter of fact. I mean, first of all, just to touch on the media a little bit more, I think it's very important to acknowledge that the corporate media is so ingenious and so incredibly insidious in this country because they're not blatant about it. I mean, remember that in the old Soviet Union, all of the citizens of the Soviet Union knew that their print media and their broadcast media was chock full of propaganda and lies. And so as a citizen, they would watch the television and read the media and try as best as they could to sort of figure out what was really going on. The citizens of the Soviet Union were experts at what I'll call media critique, being able to sort of filter through the propaganda and try to figure out what the real truth is. Unfortunately, in this society, most people actually take the media, which is print and radio and broadcast, television, which is chock full of propaganda and lies, but they believe it as if it were true. So our challenge is your challenge as a radical journalist, my challenge as a social justice organizer is how do we tell our story in such a way that people begin to recognize that the dominant corporate media don't tell us what to think, but they're framing the discussion so that they dictate what we think about. There are very few outlets that we as activists and citizens have that are not corporately filtered, that don't actually frame the discussion. So any chance that I get an opportunity to talk to a journalist like yourself who is actually giving an opportunity for citizens to talk about the issues of democracy, I jump on it. So you also then asked about what's going on internationally. I'm very proud to inform your listeners that the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has actually initiated a national campaign in the United States specifically, but they're an international organization, to abolish corporate personhood. That is, that is going about creating the stage to actually have a constitutional amendment that makes it clear that corporations do not have any rights whatsoever under the Constitution. It doesn't abolish corporations as business enterprises, but says you're not going to have any special privileges and rights under the law. And your listeners can check them out on the web at www.wilpf.org. That's Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, and there are chapters all over the United States, Canada, and the rest of the world.
So what does this mean, David Cobb, to have – so what is it that you're looking for? So corporations, a private business would still exist. So what is it exactly that is the goal of legislatively?
The goal legislative would be to be able to make it legal for local municipalities, state governments, and even national governments to be able to define what a corporation can or cannot do. And as opposed to simply regulating on the margins the amount of harm that they might cause, to actually begin the process of letting our elected and forcing our elected representatives to define what is going to be acceptable or unacceptable. Let me give you an example. Every single one of your listeners is eating genetically modified foods. Everybody in the world is eating, unless you grow all of your own food, you were eating genetically modified foods. Now, how did that happen? Where was the public discourse, either at the local, state, national, or international level around that? The answer is, and who the heck made that decision? Sue, I'll tell you who made that decision. The unelected, unaccountable corporate CEOs of Archer Daniels Midland, Monsanto, Dow. You know, the agribusiness giants actually dictated to us what food we were going to eat. We have lost control of our own food supply. I could go down the list. Who's dictating our transportation policy? General Motors, ExxonMobil, Firestone. I mean, these big, huge transnational corporations. What I'm suggesting is that it is possible if we demand from our elected representatives to represent us instead of corporations, that we could define our own transportation policy. We would have a mass transit system in this country if we, the people, and our elected representatives were actually capable and able of defining it rather than allowing our mass transit systems in municipalities to be destroyed by General Motors and Firestone. If your listeners have not seen a video called Taken for a Ride, it basically describes exactly how General Motors and Firestone literally destroyed mass transit and the trolley system in this country. And you know what? At the end of and I'm not scared of saying this over the public airwaves because truth is a complete defense. And it's not just me who says they did it. The Attorney General of the United States initiated a lawsuit, and General Motors was found guilty of doing it. And do you know what their fine was, Sue? $5,000. $5,000 they paid for the ability to destroy mass transit, and they did it in order to make people dependent upon the automobile. It's a shameful truth. It's a hidden history. But when we begin to know what that history has been, it gives us a roadmap for what we can do in the future.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of hidden history, and it's deep. And It's a really big job to overturn this system of corporate control. So what can you talk some more, David Cobb, about the campaign and what people might do in the last few minutes we have here?
Sure. Let me give – how about some examples of – because none of this is going to be easy. It's not like you wake up one day and decide, I think I'll abolish corporate personhood, and then when I'm through with that, I'll break for lunch. That's not going to be the process. But let me share with you some groups and organizations and local municipalities that myself and my colleagues have been working in and what they've been able to accomplish in just a couple of years of organizing. For example, in South Central Pennsylvania, we've been working with local farmers. Mostly they were hog farmers who were finding themselves under an onslaught of big corporate what are called factory farms or factory hog farms. Now, I hate to even call them factory farms because if you've ever seen one of these facilities, they're horrific. They're horrible. Both they're depressing, the amount of injustice and cruelty that happens to the animals in those facilities, as well as the dehumanizing experience of the folks who actually have to work there are just utterly, utterly abhorrent. And there have been lots of folks who have been fighting these, but typically the fights have been around issues of the fly swarms that come in hog lagoons. They've been involved in leaching of these pollutants into the groundwater. They've been involved with the odor that's associated with them or the air quality issues. Well, a group that I work with called the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund at www.celdf.org actually began to reframe that entire debate and said, you know what, this issue is not just about the harms that are being caused. This is destroying the way of life of South Central Pennsylvania, which consisted mostly of family farms. And so in order to confront this, we simply need to eliminate factory farms. They began the process of educating themselves and began to pressure their local elected officials, and they began to actually abolish factory farms.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. And you see the difference between regulating a corporation and defining the economics of your community? They began to write legislation that said, in our community, we will not allow factory farming or corporate farming operations to exist, period. In Arcata, California, they had a local citizens initiative passed to have a town hall meeting to address the question, quote, can we have real democracy when corporations wield so much wealth and power under law, end quote. It's a community of roughly 17,000 people total. And they got 600, and of course only half of those are even adults, they got 600 people to come to a town hall meeting to begin to engage in public space the conversation of what would democracy look like. And in one short year, now they've actually got their city council to cap the number of formula chains, restaurant chains, and only locally owned businesses are allowed in Arcata, California. After this point, yet another example in just about 1 year once the process began of people defining their own economics.
Wow, well, that's really encouraging, all right. And I've heard other stories recently about local communities taking stands about big issues. So, and of course, the whole issue of decentralization and who decides and who's in charge and, you know, self-determination and all that kind of thing is so important around all different kinds of issues. So that is very encouraging to hear, and it's easier to work on a local level. It's not so overwhelming, which is one of the things that trips people up a lot.
You're right, Sue, and I want to really point out that from those local initiatives, you can. It's true that the two examples that I just gave were specific local control over local issues and localized problems. But now let's take that same approach and ask ourselves, how did the nuclear freeze movement do it? How did it come to pass that not a single new nuclear power plant has been built in the last 25 years in the United States of America? The answer, it got started in Western Massachusetts when locality after locality began to pass nuclear-free zones. Do you remember those? And those, and of course, and then within a period of about 2 to 3 years, you had local communities all across the country began to declare in ordinances. They were non-binding resolutions, actually, that just declared, in our community, there will not be another power plant built. And that caught fire, and it captured the imagination of citizens who became engaged and activated around those issues. And so the same thing could happen around the World Trade Organization, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, corporate personhood. You name it, we could do it if we just begin to capture the imagination of citizens again.
Really? Well, that's it's just so good to talk to somebody that's so up and optimistic and has got so many great answers and reminds us of what people have done in the past, because we have done a lot, and if not us, who? Huh?
That's exactly, if not us, who? You know, we are the leaders we've been waiting for, Sue, and that's the history of the United States of America is really a history of people struggling against concentrated wealth, power, and decision-making, and it's time for us to take up the charge. Stop whining about the fact that we're being oppressed. Get up, stand up, and begin to organize, agitate, and demand a better world, and when we make those demands, we find more often than not, we're actually able to accomplish them.
Well, David Cobb, thank you so very much. Let's see, would you give the webpage again and any contact information you want to give?
Certainly. For the Green Party of the United States, you can go to www.gp.org. For the Program on Corporations, Law, and Democracy, you can go to www.pocld.org. You can email us at people@poclad.org, or you can call us at 508-398-1145.
Okay, well, thank you very much for this interview, and everybody, get active. My name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening. Mm-hmm.